Hello and welcome to A Friend in Me, a podcast about friendship, culture, and the kingdom of God, all through the lens of Pixar. I'm really excited for this episode on Coco. It's actually in my top five favorite Pixar movies. Absolutely love the heart of this film, the story, the music. So I'm excited for you to hear my conversation with Anna Sommer on this amazing movie. Directed by Lee Unkrich, who also directed my favorite Pixar movie, Toy Story 3. So, yeah, I'm really excited for this episode, and let's just jump right into it. So here is a summary of the movie Coco. Despite his family's generations-old ban on music, young Miguel dreams of becoming an accomplished musician like his idol, Ernesto de la Cruz. Desperate to prove his talent, Miguel finds himself in the stunning and colorful Land of the Dead. After meeting a charming trickster named Hector, the two new friends embark on an extraordinary journey to unlock the real story behind Miguel's family history. So there you have it. There's the summary of Coco, and I hope you appreciate this conversation about this excellent film.
Hey, everybody. I'm here today with my good friend, Anna Sommer. How are you doing, Anna Sommer?
I'm great. How are you, Porter?
I'm doing well. To be honest with you, I'm a little embarrassed tonight.
Oh, no. Why is that?
Because I went to a Pixar trivia night tonight, Anna Sommer. You would think, okay, this guy has a podcast about Pixar. Of course, he's going to win this Pixar trivia night. And I've won 2 years in a row. I've won the Pixar trivia. But this was not my year, Anna Sommer. I came in second place
in
the Pixar trivia. Yeah. I was embarrassed. And so my team name is Remember Us, just like from Coco, Remember Me, right?
Yes.
So last year we won and our team was Remember Us, like with a period at the end. So This year we came back all cocky and we made our team name Remember Us with the question mark. And we did not win. So
brutal. That question mark was a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, it was like, you remember us? And which is like, dude, it's a Pixar trivia night. Don't be that cocky, but.
Oh, that's brutal. I'm so sorry.
Anyway, it was fun. And we will try to avenge our loss next year. But yeah, this team.
Get them next time.
man, there's just a couple questions I should have remembered that I didn't. But anyway. So yes, that's how I'm feeling. But I'm excited to talk about Coco. And hopefully this will bring up my spirits after the loss there.
Yes. Yeah. We're here to redeem.
Yes. So, Anna Sommer, first, I'd love to talk about how we became friends. So, what is your recollection of that journey?
That journey. What a journey. It really has been a journey. So, I was in Wilson Hall the year that you were a Lewis Hall RA. And I became very close with Jordan, who was on staff with you, and she was my RA. And I had a lot of interest in Res Life. So I think that was like the seeds were being planted, but I don't think we had yet talked until I was officially on Wilson Lewis staff with you the following year. So by the end of my freshman year, we knew that we were going to be on staff together in Wilson. And I distinctly remember like one of the first nights, if not, I think it was the first night that we were all together as a soon to be staff, and we were like talking about things about us, things that people might not know, and I distinctly remember saying something about like, oh, I like reading or something, and you like fist bumped or something, like you were very enthusiastic about that. I think we just like connected right away, and I was very excited, like, of everyone that we were going to be on staff with. I was just so excited to get to know you more, and like the intuition was right in that we would be good friends, because I think we have a lot of interests in common, and Yeah. So that was just like best, being on staff together. But honestly, since then, it's really been such a journey. You've been such a faithful friend. Like, I have so many just like sweet texts from you that are like, hey, like, would love to catch up for so many years. Cause that was like, what, five? That's at least 5 years ago.
I know. Six, I think. Five or six. It's crazy.
That's a long time.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. And now our friendship has been a long distance friendship from so many of the last years. I feel like you've just been such a faithful friend. You're very good about reaching out and reconnecting. So I really appreciate that about you. But yeah, it all started back in Res Life, as all good friends do.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So I remember. So Jordan, who you were close with, she was someone on staff my first year who I could just make her laugh with just like a look. I would just send her like rolling. And so I would, in staff meeting, I would just create chaos by making a funny look at Jordan. And she would just couldn't stop laughing. And then I remember meeting you and being like, oh, like another person who I can make laugh. And but then as we had conversations, it was like, oh my gosh, like your heart for ministry, your heart for the gospel, your heart for your residents. It was just, yeah, you just are overflowing with care and joy and love. So you're very fun to be around. And then obviously we're in the same building caring for the same, you know, people. And because I moved over from Lewis to Wilson, where then you were in Wilson as well. So it was a great time. It's the good old days.
Good old days.
And now I'm an RD and I get to facilitate some of those staff friendships.
That's so
which
crazy.
Is cool. And I have like the picture of our staff is in my apartment, and like I'll point people out to my RAs. They're like, this is my staff. Like, they were so great. And my RA's like, he's living in the past, but no. But
that's so sweet. It really was like just magic. Like, I don't always feel that way about, like, I've worked in several different ministries since then, and I don't always feel like there's a natural chemistry. Obviously, like, Jesus unites believers. But there was this like very unique natural chemistry on that staff our year, just because, I don't know, it was like this beautiful unity and diversity. I think it was one of the most, if not the most diverse staff that Gordon has ever seen. We had like an even split of male versus female. We had an even split of domestic students versus international students. Yeah. It was just so rich. And I think it really like family level by the end of that year.
Absolutely.
But also we just laughed so much, like absolutely chaotic.
We laughed. We prayed a lot. We laughed and prayed a ton, both. Sometimes at the same time we would.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it was great. And now you just told me you are in full-time ministry. You've moved to the West Coast with your husband.
Yes.
And tell me about what you're up to now.
Literally living a dream come true. So ever since I was 13, I felt like the Lord had clearly revealed to me that I needed to be in full-time youth ministry. And I've been serving like volunteer in youth ministry the majority of the time since then. But now to finally get paid to do what I would want to be doing anyways is like such a dream. It's so fun. So I just started in December with this youth ministry, and I've been trying to like document every time I'm doing something that's just like a pinch me moment. Like, this is crazy. I'm getting paid to do this right now. So I've got some selfies of like getting pied in the face, being at a silent disco.
So fun. Yeah.
Hiking up a tubing hill in the middle of the night with tiki torches, just like the most ridiculous things. So truly so fun. But yeah, we moved out here because my husband Matt is pilot. So God got us where we needed to be. But I feel like this is kind of a career move for me in that sense too, that like God just had totally prepared me for this ministry and this ministry for me. And it really feels like a huge answer to prayer. So
Praise the Lord. Ah, that's so that makes me so happy in the summer. Because I remember those late night conversations we'd have in the Wilson Lounge talking about faith and your heart for to do ministry. I remember you talking about your experience with dorm parents and like and your desire to do ministry alongside people, incarnational care for others. And so it's so awesome to hear that God is working through you.
Yeah. Very full circle to like see where you're at now and to see where I'm at now, because like we talked about these things as ideas like 5 years ago and now we're doing it. And that's such a gift from God. So amazing. I am so glad that I still have you in my life, so I get to see the fruits of that and see you on the other side of that, living life as an RD.
Thank you, Anna Summer. Right back at you. Right back at you. So, and another thing, now transitioning kind of to the movie, a reason I have you on for the movie Coco is because a lot of this film is focused on family and family reconciliation. And that was another topic that our friendship involved. And to be honest, like, you are a part of my testimony because of the conversations we had about family reconciliation. So you and I have both had some times in our family where there was division and conflict and things weren't like very smooth at all. And you were able to testify to me how God had moved in your family and how he had brought about redemption and healing at a time when I was feeling a lack of that, or when I was feeling kind of hopeless in a family situation. And you gave me, there's just this confidence that, hey, God's going to show up. I know that God's not done with you or your family yet. And here's how he's worked in my family. Mm-hmm. And so it's been such a joy for me now over the years to have healing and freedom in that relationship and in the bondage to bitterness that I had been having that I was able to release. It's cool now that I get to be a voice of encouragement to others who are in those moments and feel like nothing's ever going to change, or, oh, we're just stuck in this rut. So I can say, hey, let me testify to what God has done in my life. And this was done for me by my friend Anna Summer. She testified to me what God had done in her life. So thank you so much for that.
Wow. That is so amazing. I wish Porter from 2018 could hear you right now. Like, he would be so blown away. That's so incredible. And like the amount of people who you have now impacted with your story too, that's just so significant. But that's very special to me to know that like God used that part of my story in your life too. But I just loved those conversations. I feel like that was something that really bonded us in our friendship outside of Res Life, was just like the reality of like, even if you're not living under your parents' roof, you're always navigating how to have a healthy relationship with your family and all of that. And I think that transition, whether people admit it or not, is hard for everyone to go from like parent to child, adult to adult relationship. But like your honesty and vulnerability through that transition, I think really aided in your ability to find reconciliation and find redemption and healing. But yeah, that was such
thank
a
you.
Time.
Well, it's all God's grace for both of us. It's all the grace of God that has brought healing. And for those of you listening, if you are in a situation with your family where it feels like you're trapped or stuck and it feels like there's no way path forward towards healing or redemption, just know that God is with you. He does hear you, and that he hopes to move in your life in ways that you would never imagine. So, And if you are a listener who knows me personally, or even if you're not, if you want to reach out to talk about stuff like this, I'm always happy to talk about it, because I just see it as an area where God has moved in the area of forgiveness and reconciliation in my family. And I'm happy to talk with others about it. So, and I'm sure, and Anna Summer is going to talk about it too. I know she has a very busy schedule and she's already has youth under her, but
No, hit us up. Leave
comment in the comment section. Your family trauma. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that, but feel free to reach out. Oh, man. Okay. Well, let's get to the movie, Anna Summer. So I know this is one that you and I both had. Another thing our friendship had bonded over was loving Coco and thinking it's a great movie. So we've talked for a long time. I've said, when I finally get to Coco, it's going to be Anna Summer. And now we're here, which is awesome.
This is such a like full circle moment because that literally has been years in the making. Like years and years ago, you were like, we're doing Coco together. And I was like, great, I'm not going to rewatch it until it's time for the podcast. So there have been multiple moments in the last couple of years where I'm like, I kind of want to rewatch it, but I can't.
There you go. Well, thank you for your restraint. So yeah, Coco 2017 Pixar film directed by Lee Unkrich, who is also the director of Toy Story 3, which is my favorite Pixar movie. And this, he just delivers again. Excellent, excellent film. So yeah, Anna Summer, what stood out to you this time watching Coco?
I mean, like right off the bat, the visuals and music are just so stunning and they work together so well. Like the visuals feel musical and the music mm-hmm. feels visual somehow. Like they really feel like they're totally in tandem creatively. It's just such a colorful, colorful film. You could make a poster out of like any second of whole movie. And the soundtrack I would totally want to listen to on repeat. And it like kind of reminded me how good it is. I definitely remembered that I loved it because before I got married, my dad and I were trying to decide if we wanted to do like a father-daughter dance or what. And we almost were going to like do a performance of Remember Me. But then we were practicing it. And we got too emotional. We're like, we can't do this. So we didn't do it, but just like practicing it in preparation. Now the song Remember Me like brings me back to my dad and like the leaving and cleaving process of starting my own family and being sent out from my family of origin. So
wow.
Now it just hits different.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely visuals, music were incredible, but I think the thing that stands out the most is how emotional this movie is. Like, I definitely cried the first time I watched it, but rewatching it, rather than just crying at one moment, there were at least four, maybe five times where I got a little teary, felt the waterworks coming. So yeah, it's got it all. It's got the deep emotional.
So I started watching this last night and then I had scheduled to go to a different movie with a friend. So I had to pause it in the middle, right? So I go up to the scene where he finds out that Hector is his real great grandfather. And then I had to pause it and go watch another movie. Well, the movie I go to see is this movie, The Iron Claw, which was just in theaters. and I don't know if I'm going to spoil The Iron Claw. So if you're a listener and you don't want it spoiled, skip ahead like two skips on your 15 second. Okay. This is your warning. All right. The Iron Claw is all about like a family that where the brothers keep dying. It's very sad. It's a true story. And it's this wrestling family. And it's about family, right? But then three people in the family die throughout the film. So it's really heavy and sad. And so then I didn't cry at The Iron Claw. I was like, okay, this is like really heavy movie, but it didn't make me cry. It could have probably had a more emotional punch, but anyway, I come back. I watched the end of Coco and I was weeping. I was absolutely weeping the whole thing. Because then, of course, you're thinking about death and life and being separated, but then remembering each other. And of course, in both movies were about death. Anyway, I wept at the end of this viewing of Coco. So, I mean,
talk about emotional whiplash right now. Coco with the ending of The Iron Claw.
I know. So anyway, I also, so yeah, the tears and Remember Me, that when he sings it to his great grandma, it's incredible. And one thing I love about this movie is that its title character is this elderly great grandma, or great grandma, and that it's just a celebration of who she was and who her father was. And I just love that the movie's named Coco. And I remember watching it the first time and being like, most of the movie being like, why is this called Coco? Like, she's not the main character. And then at the end being like, oh wow, this was about her all along. So that's always stood out to me. But I think this time, the one thing that I realized more than I've realized before is how Dante, the dog, really is Miguel's spirit guide the whole time. If you watch, there's a lot of plot development that comes because Dante ran off or dragged Miguel in a certain direction, or Dante does something crazy and it leads him to the next stage of the film. So if you watch it again, just watch, like, when he meets Frida Kahlo, it's because Dante ran into the room, which then obviously Frida is a big part of how at the end of the movie they needed Frida to do what they needed to do. And there's other moments where it's like Dante kind of leads him to Hector for the first time, when Hector is in the immigration room asking for help. So anyway, Dante is the real MVP here. And I'm glad that he gets his wings at the end.
Yes. Every time. What is it that every time a
bell rings?
A bell rings, an angel gets his wings. There you go.
Every time a bell drops on Ernesto de la Cruz's head,
Dante
gets his wings. Yeah. Oh, man. That is kind of a dark joke. It's funny, but to have the bell fall on him again is like, wow. Like, that's kind of,
Yes. Okay. Now that you're mentioning that, that is a little brutal. Like, I was trying to think, like, if there are any other Pixar films that really show murder and death like that. But, like, that whole thing definitely stood out to me. I remember watching when the big reveal of Ernesto de la Cruz and all of that comes out, I was like, wait, this is way darker than I remember.
I know. The poison. I mean, he's a murderer. Yeah, it's intense. And then he gets kicked, drop kicked by the Alabrije.
It's brutal.
One up. There's not a lot of villain deaths in Pixar. The Bug's Life one is pretty gruesome. He gets eaten by a bird. And up, he falls to his death, holding just a couple balloons, which is such a good image, but it's sad.
That's really sad.
But and here he gets, I mean, he's already dead. So I don't think he is dying again in that scene, because you don't die again unless people completely forget you. Although at the end, in the real world, people have written "forget you" over his grave, I think, which is also dark. I don't know if it's his grave or his family home, or I don't
know. Oh my gosh.
But Ernesto is now, his reputation, which was his idol, that was why he was willing to do horrible things, was because he cared about his reputation. Yeah. And then at the end, he gets his comeuppance and his reputation is tarnished. But anyway,
so all in all, the film, deeply impactful emotionally.
What is one image, so one freeze frame, that stood out to you? I've been challenged to focus more on imagery, not just the scripts or the themes. So what is an image that maybe drew you in, or maybe did contribute to the themes of the movie? But
I think something that I was just blown away by was, like, the first time Miguel strums the guitar and the leaves, like, light up. It is just so beautiful.
Yeah.
So that's not really a freeze frame. It's probably more of, would like do better as a GIF.
Yeah. It's a shot.
I just love the like pathway just kind of like lighting up and like kind of coming alive with the strum of his guitar.
That is really cool.
I love that moment. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that stuck out to me this time was the scene where he goes to, he's trying to get a guitar. So he goes and visits this kind of decrepit old skeleton. I mean, they're all dead, but this guy's clearly been through some things even in the afterworld. And then he fades away. So this is like a major moment in the film when you see him fade away. But then there's this shot of the shot glass. Like he had brought a drink to drink with his friend, but his friend is forgotten. Like no one on earth remembers him anymore. And so he fades away, what they call the second death, which actually I read is a concept in, I forget. I think it's a concept that they actually came across as they were writing the film. And when they realized that that was an idea that, oh, when you're completely forgotten, that's almost the second death. And that's why Dia de los Muertos is done to honor the dead. That unlocked the movie for them because they realized, we needed to make it about memory and honoring and remembering. Mm-hmm. So, but that
it
shot of the glass.
The state, for
yes.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, if they're already dead, you're like, well, there's no stakes, but oh, they can die in a second, in a deeper way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so the image of the one shot glass flipped over and the one still there full of drink that will never be drunk because he's gone. That image was like, whoa, this is a kid's movie? Like, you're showing two shot glasses and they have this like dramatic meaning. So anyway, that stuck with me.
That is very significant. Yeah. That was one of the four or five moments that made me emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. And Summer, real quick, before we move on, I want to read, I found an article that talks about that when they discovered that concept of another death. It says, they said, you brought in cultural consultants. So this is an interview with the director. You brought in cultural consultants and you mentioned extensive Mexican travel. What did you learn among all of this that was most surprising to you that you most wanted to put in the story? And he says, the biggest thing we didn't know that came out of the research was from someone who was advising us, an expert on the holiday Dia de los Muertos. We learned for the first time about this notion that we can all potentially die three deaths. The first one being when our heart stops and we're no longer living. The second one being when we're buried or cremated and no one can see us anymore. And we all have the potential to die this third and final death when there's no one left among the living who remembers us. That seemed like such a powerful, poignant idea, and we knew we needed to be part of the film somehow. Initially, it was more of a side idea, but ultimately, in the course of the story development, we realized it was core to what the movie was ultimately about. And so then we wove it back into the bedrock of our story. That's really cool.
That is so significant. I love that. And I love that just reveals like part of the creative process too is like sometimes you don't know that you've struck gold until you're like halfway into it. And then you're like, whoa, light bulb moment's going off here and it's brought everything together and like a breakthrough moment creatively. So that's awesome.
It is a really cool thing in animated films. They do that a lot. Like the story just keeps changing throughout the whole process of the film because you're storyboarding. So you're like creating the art and stuff while you're also creating the story. And so, yeah, it's really cool hearing about those processes. And like you said, those moments when you realize, oh, wait, we could have that be a core part or stuff like that. So, well, let's now move to the cultural piece. We talked a little bit about this before recording, but yeah, some of the emotion came from the topics that it focused on. So what stood out to you as some cultural implications of Coco?
Yeah, well, I think just the fact that it is such a family-focused film, like, that is something we're kind of losing progressively, very quickly, actually, from Hollywood, because just as a culture, as a society, the nuclear family has been so devalued and de-emphasized. So, yeah, just the fact that the whole crux of the film is about prioritizing family, that in itself is significant. But then like the moral of the story, like if it had been written now, if this movie was being released now, even just, I don't know, when did this movie come out? Like 6 years ago? 7 years ago?
Yeah, 2017.
2017. Yeah. So it hasn't been that long, but I still think it's been long enough that if this film was done now, the moral of the story would be slightly more turned towards
the individual.
Forget your family. Yeah. Yeah, do what you want. You do you. Live your truth. Pursue your dreams. But throughout the film, like, you think that Miguel is going to, and ultimately he does have this moment where he gives into what his Mama Imelda has been saying, like, family's most important and all of that. And he kind of gives into that in the last climax of the film. But then the whole moral is you're able to have both. Like, there's room to both hold on to your own passions and your dreams, as well as still prioritizing your family. And the fact that they still hold on to prioritizing family and valuing family and thinking of the needs of those around you feels really refreshing and different from, like, everything else that's being put out there right now by Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So I just really appreciated that. I want more of that. I want more, like, family focused. Let's think of others' needs. And, like, obviously there's still room to have your own passions.
Yeah.
If you want to be a musician, you can still be a musician, but you don't have to completely forget about the family you came from. So mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. What about you?
Well, I want to talk about what you just said first before we get to my thing, but
okay.
I agree with you that it's this kind of beautiful celebration of family. And I really like this time I noticed these lines kind of more specifically. So at the beginning, she says, I give you my blessing to go back to put my picture on the ofrenda and to never play music again. Because to her, music is what ripped her family apart. And so she's made music the scapegoat for the pain in her, yes, in her family. Right. And so, but then to him, he's like, well, my family doesn't, they reject me. They hate me. Like, they reject this thing that I love. I want to make music. So I don't even want to. So he then says at one point in the movie, I don't want to be a part of this family. Or, all right, yeah, I don't want to be in this family. And and so that's the division here, is she doesn't want him to play music because that's, she sees as a threat to the family. But then he's like, she won't let me play music. So what gives? So then later in the movie, he is crying with Hector and saying, when they're in the pit and they've been thrown into the pit, and he's crying and he says, I told them I didn't care about the stupid ofrenda. And then he starts crying and he says, I told them I didn't care. And he's just crying because he realizes by his actions, he told his family he didn't care about them, which wasn't true. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, he communicated a lack of care and it breaks him down. And he realizes, it's more important to me that my family knows I care about them than that I get exactly what I want. So then that's when he sacrificed his willingness to, you know, put his dream above his family. Well, then at the end, Imelda is giving him the blessing and she says, I give you the blessing to go back, to put the picture on the ofrenda. And then he says, I never play music again. And then she, like, that's what he's anticipating she's going to say. But instead she says, and never forget how much your family loves you. Like, and that is now the blessing, is that that was really what she was afraid of, is she just didn't want him to forget his family. But the music was the scapegoat. But the real underlying fear was, we don't want to forget each other. We can't forget each other. We need to remember each other and to love each other. And so that's just such a beautiful way to tell that story that you were saying, the celebration of family, but it's in these wonderful, this wonderful arc that both Imelda and Miguel go on. That just, is very relatable. And you see it happening, that tension happens a lot in the world. And so it was just beautiful to see both characters change and how they change.
That's so good. Yeah. And that's, like, just a beautiful imagery of, like, healthy conflict and healthy compromises. Like, sometimes you have to keep digging to get to the issue underneath the issue. And sometimes it requires sacrifice on both people's part. In the end, it's us together versus a problem, rather me against you and you against me. And that's, like, where they arrive, which is, like, the goal of healthy conflict in family, is to view each other as on the same team. So I love that.
And then in the final song, he's singing, so he's able to do music, but what is he singing? He's saying, our love for each other will live on forever in every beat of my whole corazón, heart, and my every beat of my heart. So it's like the reconciliation of music and family is now at the end. It's united. And for Imelda's daughter, I forget her name.
I think he just calls her Abuelita, right?
Yeah, yeah. She sees how music connects with her mom, who she loves and who has forgotten her for years. And then when she hears the music of her that her father used to sing to her, that's what brings her a little bit more memory and alertness that then she recognizes her daughter after hearing music. So then, yeah, music is actually bringing the healing that the family needs, even though the family was convinced the music would be dangerous.
Yeah, I think like the key difference too is like in Miguel's life versus like Hector's origin story with music is like it was kind of what you're talking about with idols. Like Ernesto de la Cruz had the idol of you know, his reputation was the idol of being a creative or whatever and doing their paving their own path. But where Miguel arrives differently is he views it as a gift and a tool, and it's not his everything. Like, his family is still what's most important, and he uses it to bless them. So, yeah, I think that's that is not a story that's being told in a lot of other pockets of society right now. So I'm really grateful that this film is putting that forward.
Yeah, and to see a boy who at the beginning was just like, I want to be famous. I want to make it, or I want to make music. I want to tell my story. And then at the end, to be the thing that he's most concerned about is his great grandma. Like, it's just really beautiful. Like, that is what his energy has now focused on, is her remembering her father. So he, yeah, I mean, such good storytelling. And you're right. It's a story that is told less. And it's interesting because I feel like I have thrown shade at Turning Red in multiple episodes, and it's not fair to Turning Red because I haven't even covered it yet. But Turning Red, literally, it was made 6 years after Coco. Like, 2023, it's not that long ago from Coco, and it almost has a polar opposite message of, like you said, like how now it's do your own thing, reject your family. Now, obviously, I think in Turning Red, the mom is... Yeah, there are some differences between the families that make a little more sense why she makes the choice at the end. But have you've seen Turning Red or no?
I haven't, actually.
Okay, you got to watch it and you will see, like, man, this is kind of an anti-Coco in a sense. and yeah, I mean, I do think there is room for some of the messages from Turning Red. So I don't want to completely dunk on it, but I think the message of Coco is a much more beautiful reconciliation of the conflict than the one in Turning Red. And in Turning Red, I do think there's some dangerous ideas floating in there.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Well, I mean, it makes sense because, like, we've had the rise of cancel culture in the last couple of years. So, like, grace is very hard to find anywhere other than the foot of the cross in terms of, like, rhetoric being put out into the world. Like, that's just not what we're seeing in social media, in politics, whatever. You do one wrong, you're out for life. So, yeah, even though it's only been 6 or 7 years since Coco was released, it's been a dramatic shift of how we view forgiveness in the world, how we view grace in the world, how we view mistakes. So it makes sense that that's what's being put out there, even by Pixar.
Yeah, the idea of forgiving your parents, you don't hear people talk about that much. You hear people talking about the trauma they got from their parents, like the damage they got from their parents, and you maybe hear people working through that and trying to come to a better self view and self understanding. I don't see in our culture an effort to emphasize forgiveness, but I think it's sad though, because that is what can heal so much of those wounds is forgiving. And like you said, obviously the foot of the cross is where we find our forgiveness and the mercy and grace that has been given to us. And I think it's only from really embracing how forgiven we are that we're even able to extend forgiveness to our family.
Yeah, that's so true. So true. Okay, I'm curious now, what was the cultural implications that you picked up on?
Okay, so I think this is a really brilliant metaphor that the movie uses of so Dia de los Muertos is this Mexican holiday where they put up the picture of the ofrenda so that their ancestors can visit them, which on the one hand, as a Christian, you could say, oh, like, I'm not sure about this premise. Like, it has a different version of the afterworld than we do. But it's a fictional animated film. I'm not trying to look to it for metaphysics. I'm trying to see, what is it trying to say about the good life? What is it saying about how we care about each other? So just acknowledging, okay, yes, obviously, I don't necessarily think this is how the afterlife works. But to have a film for the Mexican culture, Mexican heritage, to have the main metaphor be a division over a border, I think is very poignant. Mm-hmm. So there are people who have immigrated to this country because they love their family, because they want what's best for their family. And then, but then they're at a divide where they don't get to see their family if their family is on the other side of a border. And so you see this really painful scene at the, well, at the beginning, you kind of just think it's funny because Hector is going to try to get to the other side, but he's dressed as Frida Kahlo. So he has this unibrow, fake unibrow, but he's rejected. He's not allowed to go across this border, but all he wants is to see his daughter. Like, that's why he wants to go there. And so if you think about what was happening, I mean, obviously it's still a reality in our world, but if 2017, it's the rhetoric and the realities on the border and the conditions that people were put in and the families that were split, I just think, wow, this movie is tapping into a real pain point for Mexican Americans, for immigrants who are divided by from a distance and maybe sometimes are told, no, you're not allowed to see the one you love. And so that's why at the end of the movie, it's so joyful when he is able to go across, but also is able to see his beloved Coco. So yeah, I think that stuck out to me as, I don't think it was trying to make a clear point about immigration or try to like make a political argument, but I think the metaphor hits.
Yeah, for sure.
And then we think about death and life being the ultimate border that we can't cross. And it's such a, yeah, just like watching, well, another spoiler for Iron Claw. I think like that movie also focused on the separation between life and death and those who are alive and who are dead. And so I think, yeah, that is like this real border that as Christians, we have an imagination of how God does transcend that border and how we believe in resurrection. So it's different than Dia de los Muertos, but I had thoughts swirling about that too, is that this is this impassable border. And yet in this film, there's some way in which the dead and the alive can interact. And in Christ, we have hope that one day the dead will be able to, like, who are in Christ will be raised again. And we believe that death is not the final answer. So, or it does not have the final word. So that was kind of cheating and giving a little theological in my cultural section, but there you go.
It's okay. I kind of did that too. But no, I think that's so powerful. And like the longer you were talking about this metaphor of the border, the more I was realizing whether they meant to or not, it works, because like the thing that's working against Hector, like when he finally, I think it's right at the beginning where he breaks past them and he's trying to run through the bridge and he can only get so far because what's actually working against him is the very thing that should be getting him to the other side. And like in the, a lot of immigrant experience is like the thing that should be getting them to their safety and their freedom and into a sort of refuge is actually working against them now through all these policies and steps and whatever. That's a whole other topic, but I definitely think that metaphor, if the longer you look at it, the more it works, actually.
Yeah, because there's... Oh, sorry, keep going.
No, you go.
Well, because there's also all this bureaucracy on the other side, and I think there's even a line where they say, ah, bureaucrats. Like, the the system is this complex system, but you're like, wait, why did they need to have, why are they so strict about this system? Like, and so on the one hand, it's a plot point that they needed to create. And so the bureaucracy helps contribute to the plot. But on the other hand, it's like, yeah, there's all these, this paperwork, there's all this. And to Imelda, she's like, I just want to see my family. Like, can't you let me go see my family on Dia de los Muertos? This is the time I get to see them. But their family is divided by policy and by bureaucracy, just all these paperwork. Talk about, yeah, that's relevant and real. So
yeah, 100%. And even like the fact that what gives them the freedom to get to the other side is being remembered by someone on the other side, someone who's on the inside, basically, like that. And this is a little bit getting into the theological point too, but just feeling the call to remember the oppressed or to remember the foreigner and welcome them in. Like, so many of the current issues that immigrants are facing could be resolved if there were more of us on the inside, quote unquote, remembering them and fighting and making a case for them and advocating for them, you know, advocating for safety and refuge to be made possible. So yeah, even just from there, that metaphor still holds still.
Wow, this is so rich. Like, when you talk about a movie, all of a sudden you're like, whoa, there's more, because you're hearing these different, your friend's perspective. So
digging deeper. Love it.
Now let's talk about the spiritual. We've already been in the spiritual for a bit now, but
we just talk about Jesus. Oh, we love him too much.
Oh yeah, and he's so cool how he shows up in this film about Dia de los Muertos. Yeah. And you're like, wait, this is a Christian, like there's a lot of Christian themes here. And so yeah, what is, I think you told me you have two answers for this one, which I will allow. Yes. Because it's such a good movie. But yeah, what are the things that stuck out to you?
Yes, I do have two. So the first one is just how this is like kind of a retelling, if you will, of the prodigal son. Like, Hector's story is absolutely one of, he has major conflict and distance and misunderstanding with his family, goes off on his own, isolated, left to his own devices, and then after years apart, then is able to find reconciliation and redemption and be brought back into the family and fully accepted again. So that is just, I mean, just written all over it is the gospel, which I love. Just the idea of like, it's, you're never too far gone, or it's never too late to find forgiveness, to find reconciliation, to find redemption. So I love that part of Hector's story. Mm-hmm. For sure.
And that connects back to what we talked about early in our families too, about healing that has taken place and not giving up on that potential for healing to occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when I mentioned this idea to you earlier off microphone, you had mentioned the idea of like the prodigal father, and that kind of even was a further light bulb moment for me of like how significant that is even to our generation, because we're in an epidemic of fatherlessness right now. And so many people, like, daddy issues is a problem for most everyone. Mm-hmm. It's actually so rare to meet someone who has a healthy relationship with their father and their father is present and involved. So to have it be the father figure of this film who needs to find reconciliation and be redeemed to the family, I think would even strike a deeper chord with a lot of people our age. So yeah, I love the depth of that story.
Mm-hmm.
Within the film.
And in a sense, then that makes Coco the image of God in that story, because she, even though the rest of the family has said, oh, we never talk about that man, we don't think about that man, Coco still says, Papa, Papa. She still thinks about him and longs for him. And then at the end, when the song that he sang to her is sung, she lights up with this joy. And so it's like the father running to his son. This is the great grandma/daughter delighting in the the song of her father, who she has never stopped loving this whole time.
You're going to make me cry again. Yes. Yeah. That's so good. That is so good. Yes.
And then she reaches into the desk drawer and she has the picture of him. And so they're able to restore him to the Ofrenda, able to restore his place in the family because she never gave up on him. So.
Yeah. That message of like never forgotten, never forsaken. That is very powerful. Wow. This movie. I didn't even realize.
No, I didn't either until you said that. I'm like, oh, it is like the prodigal son. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Well, and that kind of ties into the second sort of theological implication is very much woven into this, but just like the idea of breaking generational curses, which is very biblical, but that's something that's really hard for our world to believe in right now, but is absolutely part of the gospel. And so many of the people who are closest to me, that's part of their testimony. Like for both my mom and my dad, they are kind of complete new chapters for their families in terms of how their families once had been versus the story that Jesus has written into their lives. Even Jordan, who we'd mentioned earlier, who was kind of our connecting point in friendship, like that's a huge part of her testimony. So many people that I'm close to, like that's a huge way that the Lord works in their lives, is just like, this family has always been one way, and here I am redeeming you and writing a new story in and through you that could even bring about healing to your whole family. So, and that's totally Miguel's story here, is like, he's the first one for generations to be musical again, and he redeems the whole family's relationship with music and the whole family's relationship with Hector. He's the tool utilized for that. So I love that imagery so much.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I pause because that also makes me think of the Iron Claw. but we're not going to... I'm incorporating that too much here, but yeah, there's so much good stuff here for Christians. Hebrews 2 is talking about salvation, but there's a really powerful verse that really struck me a couple years ago when I was spending time in solitude in the woods. It really hit me, and I think it really connects to Coco. So it says, in bringing many, this is verse 10 and 11 of Hebrews 2. In bringing many sons and daughters to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the pioneer of their salvation perfect through what he suffered. Both the one who makes people holy, so Jesus, the one who makes people holy, and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters. So Jesus is the perfect one. He is not ashamed to call you and I, Anna Summer, family. And there's this scene in Coco when he realizes Hector is my great-grandpa. And then he says, I'm proud to be his family. Mm. And then Hector yells, and I'm proud to be his family. And then they are yelling their gritos, like they're happy, even though they're still at the bottom of this pit. They are happy and proud to be family. And Jesus, we're at the bottom of a pit. We got nothing to offer here. And yet Jesus is comes into the pit with us and and yells, I'm proud to be his family. I'm proud to be I am not ashamed to call Porter my brother. What? Like, that is so beautiful.
Wow. And it's in that, like, acceptance and embrace that like our confidence and our new identities, new sense of self is found. And like you even see that in Miguel and Hector's journey, like both of them in finding acceptance in each other, like finally a family member who fully embraces me. That's where outwardly they're then like agents of peace and change and reconciliation, because they've received that love and now they give that love, and so they're so much more ready to reach out and love to like Mama Imelda and to the rest of their family. I just had a talk with a bunch of my youth girls last week about like how before we can get to the point of like being used in the kingdom, first we have to recognize our value found in Christ. And like, once you can believe that you matter, then you can believe that your voice matters, and then you're more likely to outwardly express that. But it doesn't start with the outward expression, you know, it starts with that like inner, like, okay, wow, I am cherished and valued as a family member of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That's significant. That gives me a role of high honor, which makes me want to act in a way that is worthy of that role of high honor as an ambassador of Christ.
And when you hear him cheering so loudly for you, it makes you want to cheer loudly for him and say, he is the one. He's the one who has forgiven me and reconciled me to God. And he is the one who deserves all the glory, because he is shouting over us when we don't even deserve it.
Yes. Are you, I know you're a big John Mark Comer fan as well. Are you currently reading Practicing the Way by any chance?
I got it in the mail. I have not started reading it yet, but I do have it.
I'm like 80 pages in. It's my favorite John Mark Comer book so far.
Wow.
I know. I'm really loving it. But one key moment that's really stuck with me is he describes prayer is, I forget who's, this is maybe a monk's definition from long ago, said that it's Jesus gazing at me and me gazing at Jesus. So it was just this like mutual affection and attention given to each other. Just like communion with the Lord is a reciprocal attention, reciprocal affection. So yeah, even that deepens that level of Hector and Miguel just celebrating each other and that being an image of us in Christ.
Hmm. Wow. So I love it. I love it. I love this movie even more after this conversation. So any other final thoughts on the spiritual and cultural?
Oh, I don't know, but it's making me feel like now I need to go rewatch it for a third time.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, now it's time for us to say what character the other person is. You want me to go first or do you want to go first?
I'll go first because I'm not sure about mine.
Okay.
I did a deep dive looking through the entire cast list and I was like, there's just like not really one that's 100% true. But then the more I sat with which one like initially stood out to me, the more I was like, I could find reasons why. My initial thought was Hector. But then I was like, I don't know. Is that true? Is that not? I was kind of waffling. But then the longer I thought about it, the more I was like, no, I do actually see this. But it's mainly because, first of all, you guys are both, you know, you're creatives, natural creative, drawn to your creative pursuits with a level of goofiness and silliness that you carry with you. But at the same time, there is such a depth to you and such a like grit and resilience. And the other thing that really stood out to me about Hector that reminds me of you is like, I've seen you through so many chapters of life, like we've already discussed. I can even remember in that first year of friendship, like you and I had discussed loneliness a lot too. And even in seasons of loneliness, or we were even both friends through quarantine, seasons of isolation, you are still so community focused, even in those moments. And that like Hector, he had years and years and years of isolation and being on his own, but like still had love for others and cared for others. And you see like in the way that he just immediately is trying to protect and care for Miguel, even though he hasn't received that same like love and protection in so long, I think is reminiscent of the heart you have for others too, part of the way that you just love people, you're thinking of others, caring for their needs. So I'm locking it in. That's my answer.
What a blessing to hear. Thank you, Anna Summer. That's very kind. So I appreciate that.
I hope that it's in a good way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I hear that and I'm like, oh, cool. And then the way you connected it to his ability to persevere and caring for others, even when on his own. Yeah, mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Mm. Yeah, for you, Anna Summer, I believe you are like Coco herself. And I think that is because you have a joy that sticks with people.
Mm.
And the smile of his little girl is what motivates Hector, this whole movie is Coco and her joy and the delight she had when she was a little girl. And then even when she's very, very old and is for most of the movie has just sat there with a blank expression on her face at the end, when the song is Remember Me is sung to her again, she lights up with this joy and this peace that is still part of who she is. And I just think you are going to be an old person who has a lot of joy and like just thinking about who you are now and the way you're able to show the love of Christ now, the way that God is going to mature you in the mm-hmm. next like 40 years, like walking with Jesus. And John Mark Comer talks about this, but just being able to walk with Jesus over that period of time, I'm just so confident that your joy that sticks with people now will be even deeper and richer and more impactful towards the end of your life. And I just think she is the most, I think, joyful character in the film, even though she only has, like, we see her as a little girl and as a very old lady.
Mm.
But we still see a lot of her the joy that sticks with people. So thank you for for that.
Thank you, Porter. Yes and amen, I received that. That's like a benediction I am going to hold on to. Lord, let me be joyful like Coco in my old age.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny that you say that, because after I watched Coco for the first time, I was like, I aspire to be an old lady that has braids. Like, long hair and braids. I want to be a person.
I love it. And this might be dramatic, but one day, the thing about this movie is, one day at the end of all of this, you and I, as children of the King, will walk from death to life.
That's
right.
Life.
And we will get to experience eternal life as friends together, mm-hmm. which is awesome.
Yeah. That's such a gift. That's amazing. Truly lifelong friendship into eternity. What a gift.
Yes. Yes. Well, what a blessing, Anna Summer. This is just a sheer joy from start to end. It is late at night here. It's 12:20 a.m.
And you're a trooper. The things you...
I need to go to bed. I'm probably kept the people in these rooms next to me awake the whole time, but...
You're going to have to file a noise complaint on yourself.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, thank you. This was awesome. And thank you to all those who listened. Hope you enjoyed this conversation. And thank you for listening. Take care, Anna Summer. God bless you.
Thanks, Porter. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
And there you have it. Coco. What a movie. What a story. And what a great conversation that I had with Anna Summer. So thank you all for listening. Before we go, I just want to share a quick encouragement and challenge for you all from the book of Exodus. So if you think about the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, we have number 5, which I think is pretty relevant for our time today, where we're at as a culture and as a society. So Exodus 20:12 says, "Honor your father and your mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you." In this day and age, there's a lot going on with kids and their parents. I mean, I think a lot of us of my age are in a stage where we're evaluating our parents, or maybe psychoanalyzing our parents, maybe talking to therapists about our parents, and all of those things are important. But I just want to remind us all of that ancient wisdom that God had for the people of Israel, that honoring your father and mother and honoring your family, the ones who have raised you and supported you in life, is an important command. And I love how in this movie, Miguel learns to honor his family. Specifically, he learns to honor and care for his great-grandmother and his great-great-grandfather, Coco and Hector. So yes, may we reflect on how our families of origin impacted us. May we seek to heal in the areas where they have wounded us. And may we seek to practice reconciliation and forgiveness with our family of origin. These are all ways of honoring our family. But may we not forget that command to honor, because I think sometimes it can be easy to blame and shame rather than to think about, well, how can, given the parents I was given, given the family of origin I was given, how can I obey this fifth commandment in a way that honors God and honors my parents? So I know that can be hard for a lot of us, and there's a lot of people listening with different stories, but may we remember God's command to us to honor our father and mother, and may we seek to do that as appropriate and as the Lord leads us to do so. So thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope this was an encouraging episode for you as it was for me. And be on the lookout. We have Incredibles 2 and Onward coming out soon. They might come a little out of order. We'll see, but those are the next two on the docket. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great one.